My guest today is an actor and writer living in LA with his wife, two children, and way too many pets. He plays an inordinate amount of Dungeons & Dragons and collects a shameful amount of toys, and he will fight anyone who doesn't love the band Styx. My guest is Todd Stashwick. I'm Aiden Nipom, and this is The Changed Podcast.
Hi, everybody.
Hi. I have to ask, what is it about Styx?
You know, it's like, look, the Beatles are my favorite band, but Styx is one of those, it's very much tethered to my kind of middle class Midwest youth. Mm-hmm. That when, especially because when I was playing D&D a lot when I was a kid, we listened to a lot of Styx and Kansas and all those arena rock prog rock bands. But there's something about you know what it was? I think specifically the song "Come Sail Away" when I was a kid.
That's a great song.
It's a great song, and there's a lyric in it that as a kid, it blew my mind. So first, it starts off as this song about an ocean voyage on a ship, and so it sort of plucked all the Tolkien strings and all those strings in my heart, setting off on an adventure. And then, they get to this part of the song where he goes, "I thought that they were angels, but much to my surprise, they climbed aboard their starship and headed for the skies." And my, like, 10-year-old brain exploded. I'm like, hang on. So the angels were aliens, but they're on a ship in this fantasy setting being visited by angels. But so they're in the past in the fantasy, but then there's spacemen who are way more advanced. So like all of this fantastic storytelling just danced in my brain. And then the power chords and the soaring vocals. So I think it just was one of those bands that hit at the right time. Mm-hmm. When my little imagination brain was exploding. And I was able to start wrestling with bigger concepts. And at the same, it was also sort of the soundtrack to my Stranger Things era life, where I was riding BMX bikes and rolling D20s and playing in basements with friends. And so there's a wholesomeness that's attached to it and a promise of possibility.
Do you have like an old Styx t-shirt or poster or anything like that in life?
I have a new one. I've seen them in the last 2 years. I've seen them consecutively. I never got to see them because when they were in their heyday, especially when I was playing D&D, I wasn't going to concerts. I was 10, 11. And that's when I was really listening to them as like sixth and seventh grade. And very much fused to those feelings of, if you think about like 77, which is when I believe the Grand Illusion album came out. That same year was
Star Wars.
Well,
77 was a big year.
I wasn't trying to bury the lead, but yeah.
Sorry.
And then there's the Rankin and Bass Hobbit. So there was Star Wars, Rankin and Bass Hobbit, and Styx Grand Illusion, and then just shortly thereafter that, as I was going down the rabbit hole of all that stuff, 79, 80 is when I started playing D&D, so it all kind of came with it. Mm-hmm. And now playing a lot of D&D as a grown-up over the last going on 3 years, it pulls me back to a lot of the music from that era. And a lot of that iconography and listening to a lot of Fleetwood Mac and Kansas. And I'm not a young person, so all of that.
These are
stuff.
Great bands. I mean, like,
they're storytellers.
They're evergreen.
They were storytellers, yeah. Rihanna, yeah. I mean, they're such great music.
Epic. Huh? Epic music. So, Todd, you're an actor.
Yeah.
You do acting.
I do the acting.
So currently, people might recognize you from 12 Monkeys.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the last series that I was on as a series regular. And that ended in 2017. Yeah.
I think the first time I met you, I was like, oh, well, first I was like, don't we know each other already? But then it was because I had seen you on television on the show Heroes.
Oh my goodness, you saw a lot of me. Because there was five of me at a time on Heroes.
You were in several places at once, a skill many of us wish we had.
Sure, I multitasked. Yeah.
But so, is there a role that you have had in your life that was like your most favorite role you ever got to play?
Dad. No.
Your family would be so thrilled with that answer.
Right? Yeah. I'm saying it so that there's a public record of having said it. you know, I have to pick just one role, if I had to, I think the role on 12 Monkeys spoke to myself as a nerd, because it was a show that I would watch. Mm-hmm. And I often play villainous types, and this was one of those wonderful roles that went from a primary antagonist to a very self-sacrificing hero in the course of a four-season arc. And mm-hmm. so that is a, and then to have had some effect on the arc of the character and the writing and the collaborative process and interaction with the writers. It was the single, right now I would say it's been the highlight of my acting career. It's also the one that I spend the most time.
Well, so I'm super curious, and I've been talking to lots of people about this idea, this broad, big, fat word, change, mm-hmm. and what that means to people. Because what I'm finding is the definition of change is a little bit nuanced for everybody. And sure. So I'm curious, when you think of this idea of change in a sort of broad sense of it, what does that even mean to you?
Well, obviously, I mean, we're always changing, right, day to day. We're not even our same selves cellularly 7 years at a time, right? Everything gets replaced. I think it has probably more to do, circumstances then affect the internal life. So I think change is when you stop seeing something one way and you start seeing it another way, and that affects how we interface with the world, ourselves, mm-hmm. each other, dogs.
dogs count. Dogs are dogs. People for many people.
Yep. So I think change is the shattering of a paradigm. On the smallest of levels, mm-hmm. and change can be thrust upon us, or change can be something, you know, there's like the earth spins around the sun, and so it is in a constant state of forward propulsion. We are in a constant state of change. Mindsets, though, can remain rigid, and no matter how much change is thrown at us, a lot of people will white knuckle an old opinion or an old paradigm or an old point of view and not allow the circumstances to affect us. Sometimes that's good. Sure. So that it doesn't cause us to become cynical or jaded or angry or bitter or hurtful or hateful from one place to another, callous. That's a negative version of change, I would imagine.
Mm. I used to have this theory that each moment where we experience a particular shattering of an understanding that we've had, that that's actually what causes us to get older. That if we somehow managed to hold on to this childlike understanding of the world forever, that we'd stay young forever. And it's these moments where our reality is shattered just a bit that we get a few more gray hairs and a couple more wrinkles, but it's a necessary part of our development.
But that's also, okay, so I think youth is also dipped in naivete, and we also equate innocence and positivity with youth, because mm-hmm. they just don't know better. They haven't learned otherwise. They haven't been shown the world. And so we say we lose part of our innocence or our childness. But I don't think youth is synonymous with innocence. And I don't think age is synonymous with a lack of cynicism. So that perhaps when faced with these darker things, it can may bolster our hope or lack of cynicism. Because it goes, nice. You know, when it goes to the thing that Mr. Rogers says in the face of crisis, look at the helpers. That is, you know, right now we are faced with a tremendous amount of change. And so it's like, you can look at the people who are negative about it, or you can look at the people who continue to kind of keep the light lit as yeah. they move forward. And sometimes it takes the strength of years, the strength of experience to work those emotional muscles so that we can continue to hold up that hope.
Oh, wow. Todd, that's beautiful.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like I do. I think
some children's
frame.
Hope can be shattered. Mm-hmm. Children can go dark quick when a paradigm shatters because they don't have the muscles or the resiliency of experience to go, this too shall pass, and therefore you will get on the other side of this through experience. I know that the sun comes out eventually, but maybe when you're a child, you don't have that, you haven't seen it happen yet.
Oh boy, I love that. Well, thank you. I feel like that's a really great way of thinking about that.
There's a great line in Fight Club. I'm going to paraphrase it, but Tyler Durden says, I don't want to leave this life without any scars. Mm. Because scars mean you allowed yourself to be vulnerable, harm and put yourself in harm's way to take a risk. You were wounded. That wound has healed. And the scar is a symbol of your ability to heal.
Mm.
It is a record. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a record of the event of healing because it's no longer an open wound. And so, and the skin and a scar is mm-hmm. super thick.
Yeah, yeah. It needs stronger. Similarly to an area where a bone experienced a break, it stitches back together stronger.
Stronger. So if that isn't hopeful, what is?
Yeah. Well, so generally speaking, you know, there's changes happening all around us. We're in the midst of change. Sometimes it feels big. Sometimes it doesn't feel like a big deal at all. Do you find that you yourself adapt quickly to changes, or do you find that there's some growing pains involved?
I've often described myself as I live my life with a flashlight, not a floodlight. Whether that's good or bad, I'm very myopic. I'm very, well, this is what's in front of me. I'm doing this now. I often don't have too much of a long view. And when you live with a flashlight, you're constantly going, oh, there's the corner of a table. Got to move. Got to go around it. As opposed to getting the lay of the entire room so I would know how to navigate my way through. I think having been an improviser for as many years as I have, my brain is wired in many ways to perceive a situation and find a way to use it no matter what's thrown your way, with the qualifier of the degree of which change is thrown at you is going to your reaction to it is going to be commensurate to the size of the thing. So I'm not a worrier too much. I'm not a panicker too much. Maybe to my detriment, I don't sweat the small stuff at the same time. Stuff does back up on me, and it does, I'm a human being. I'm pretty nimble with adjusting to change. But the doozies are the doozies. Like some of them, when you're literally talking about fundamentally pointing your cruise liner in a new direction, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, much of my life is a little cigarette boat that goes. but there's aspects of your life that you go, you're having children. Mm-hmm. This is an entirely new ocean. And so the amount of energy and upheaval sometimes to turn the boat is harder. Sometimes big changes. I always describe big, quick changes are like jerking the car to the left and nobody has their seatbelts on. Doesn't mean you don't need to be on that new road, but mm-hmm. that unexpected turn will toss everything in the car. You're still in the car, you're going the right way, but boy, that was a fast turn. And is everybody okay? Did anybody get hurt? Is a drink spilled? How are we all doing? While you're still driving and we didn't miss the exit, it just came up quicker than we thought.
I love that. Thank you. So you are asked to prepare a story to identify a moment in your life where you experienced a change, a shift, a pivotal moment. I would love to hear this story.
So in 1993, I was touring with the Second City Chicago, and we had had a gig, I forget where, and it was like a beautiful, like February night, and we had come back from the gig, and it was a local tour co gig. We weren't traveling someplace else in the country. It was, we were going to like a local college or something to do a show. And so you have all your stuff for the show. I mean, I had my suit in my little garment bag, and I had a suitcase filled with wigs and glasses and all the accoutrements that accompany being a sketch comedy performer. At the time, I was courting our stage manager, and she was a lovely, lovely person, and I was all of the age of, I think it was 93, I was 24 years old. I'll say 24. And I was courting this stage manager. We had a budding romance that was just beginning. And it was in those early kind of circling each other. And this is, it's that fun youth of beginning of a relationship. And so we had come back from the gig, and it's now like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I lived in kind of in the Belmont district area, kind of between Belmont and, if you know Chicago, Belmont and Diversey, that chunk of space in Chicago. So 2 o'clock in the morning, she at the time was living way on the north side. And so she wasn't going to take a cab all the way to the north side because it would have been too expensive. So she's like, you know what, let's take a cab that splits the difference in the space where we live, and I'll hop on the train, and then you can go on from there. I said, great. So we take the cab, we get off at the Belmont L stop. We get out of the car. I think this might have been our first kiss. And so we had this lovely, lovely romantic kiss, downy flake snow, street lights. It was a Hopper painting. And we are, we're underneath the train going overhead. And, you know, we're up against the wall saying our goodnight kisses. And it was wonderful. And I still taste her as I was letting her go, say goodbye and watching her leave and walk up the stairs. And I have my bag and I have my garment bag over my shoulder and I have my suitcase in my hand. And I just was on top of the world. I mean, I just was filled with just elation and light and hormones and all of the things that happen when you kissed a pretty girl underneath an L stop at 2 o'clock in the morning. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm walking home. I'm going to walk home. I live maybe 4 blocks from here. I live about 1/2 mile from here. So it's a beautiful night. There's some cars. I'm going to walk home. So I head down the street and I can just see the light from the street lights and the big downy flake snow. And I walk down Belmont and I take a right onto Clark Street and I'm walking up Clark Street. And my mind is still swimming with the thoughts of her and just what we just enjoyed each other. And it was very innocent and youthful and it was beautiful. And I'm walking and I'm walking, I'm lost in thought. And I'm like, I'm 6'2". I'm a big dude. And I'm like, I put this in the best possible terms. I'm a big white dude. And so I'm fortunate in this world to have not been made afraid of much. Mm. I've been gifted with privilege. And the thing about privilege is you are not aware when you have it. So I've never had to clutch car keys walking through a parking garage. I've been gifted that by genetics and the roll of the dice to whom I was born and how I was born. I was not born in a world that asked me to fear it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So with that privilege, I was like, I'm walking home at 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't bat an eye. As opposed to so many other people in this world would go, you don't do that. Based on gender, based on race, based on 100 other things that would make you go, don't do that. I did it. So I'm walking home and I'm walking down Clark Street. Again, 2 o'clock in the morning, not a lot of traffic. Street lights are on, big gloppy downy flakes. I was in a snow globe and it was gorgeous. It wasn't terribly cold because when the flakes are that big, it's not that cold, so it was perfect. And I'm walking, and I hit this corner, and this guy comes around the corner, and he passes me. And then he turns and keeps pace with me. Another guy, seconds later, comes around the corner, and he turns and keeps, now they've flanked me. And I'm just curious. I'm like, and I turn, and that's when the one guy opens his jacket to show me his gun. And then he goes, come with us. I'm like, oh, okay. So he takes me off the main strip of Clark Street, or they take me off the main strip of Clark Street around the corner. And the best way that I describe this is if you took your hands and put them in front of your ears and it sounds like your voice is not yours, yeah. Like you're hearing your own voice from far away, and anybody who has suffered an attack or trauma has probably experienced this. And I'm looking at the guy and the guy is pointing a gun at my head. And then there's a guy behind me. And so you just start babbling for your life. I go, well, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? He goes, give me the bags. And I drop the bag, drop the other bag, and I was still there, and they hadn't done anything. I go, anything else? I asked, like, can I help you? And he goes, now the wallet. I'm like, okay. Took my wallet out, handed it to him. The other guy grabs the bags, and they still hadn't let me go. And I go, now what? And I can see my apartment building. I'm home. And I go, what else? And he goes, now run, motherfucker. So my brain is going, tick, 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 tick. If I run towards my apartment building, I have to put my back to them. They grab the bags and they go that way up the side street. So they're now running away from me as my legs have never, well, what other time in my life have my legs took out from under me? Just fight or flight. And I wasn't going to fight. And so it was like, pachoo! And I ran back to my apartment building, and I woke up my roommate, and I was just like, I'm now all adrenaline. And I'm like, and it was one of those things that my first thought was, call her to see if she got home okay.
Oh, wow.
Because the world was dangerous. And like, my brain was like, we're at war. Like, make sure everybody's okay. Because if it happened to me, it probably happened to her. Like, obviously not. But my first thought was, call her to make sure she got home okay. Because I was fine. She was nowhere near this. She was heading on the L train north 15, 20 minutes ago. So I was there, and I got in my door and I panicked, but it was the first time in my life that I was aware of my life a second at a time. I'm alive now. He hasn't pulled the trigger. 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 I'm still alive. 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 And it was a random mugging. It was just a random mugging. I also recognize soldiers face guns every day. People face violence in other parts of the city every day. My middle-class white boy from the suburbs, who'd never been punched in the face. I just have found a way to avoid violence in my life. I was a small kid, smart-ass, funny boy, so I was always a way I could soft-shoe my way out of any altercation. I've never been hurt by another human being, really. And these guys really never touched me, but the threat of violence was huge, and there was two of them, and the gun looked so heavy. It was just like heavy metal, and I go, literally, this much space is what stood between me and death, which was this to this, this to this, was the amount of space that stood between me and a random act of violence. And, you know, through the lens of years, I go, these guys are as terrified as I was to do something like that. What circumstances must they have been in that leads them to hold people up in the middle of the street at 2 o'clock in the morning? And then the irony being, they opened that bag and they got wigs and glasses. You know, it's like I hope it was worth it, guys, because they got a secondhand suit and some wigs and glasses. And then the amount of, you know, the big payday that was a Turco actor's salary in that wallet at the time. They had my MTA card, my driver's license, my ATM card, and maybe $25 in cash. I mean, it was not a big haul. But yeah, that was, I suddenly got a glimpse into a different way the world operates that I'd seen in movies and television and literature and on the news. And now I was a statistic of armed violence, but I wasn't a victim. I didn't get shot, but the threat was there and the experience was there. And I was young, I was 24 years old. That's 2 years older than my son.
Yeah. So what do you feel like that, I mean, so that clearly up until that moment, you had never had any reason to be afraid. Did that change that for you?
I mean, I did, my predator instinct increased. Mm-hmm. I was much more aware when people were walking behind me for a few weeks after. It eventually abated, and I found a new normal when it comes to that. But I was much more like watching the streets as I walked them. The outpouring was a fun. My one of my fellow touring company members days later gave me a bag of fake glasses. and Joyce Sloan, who also, she was the grand dame of Second City, she also ran a secondhand shop. So she's like, you're coming to the secondhand shop and you're going to pick out one of the suits. So I was immediately taken care of. And again, like, my experience was one night for all of, I'm going to say the altercation didn't last more than a minute or two. And far, nothing compared to the violence that so many people suffer on a daily basis.
So this is interesting. A lot of times when people tell me stories, they'll want to sort of like discount the experience. Yeah, they qualify the experience a little bit as in comparison to other people. But with there being more than 7 billion people on the planet, and you're limited to your own experience, I'm guess what I'm curious about, not why you qualify. I totally understand why people do that. We don't want to make other people's experiences seem like they're not of value. In my opinion, everyone's experiences are of value.
Yeah.
My question is, for you though, what did this shift for you in your limited understanding of the world, or in your limited experience, the Todd Stashwick only experience of the world, what shifted as a result of this experience?
Well, after the initial like month or so of paranoia of just being shook by that, my experience was, I got shot that night and I died and everything else has been delicious cake.
Ha. Ah, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I could have.
Yeah.
It literally was a binary experience. It could have gone of, well, I mean, yes. Could I have been shot and wounded and survived? Yes. But there is another timeline where the gun went off and shot me between the eyes and I'm just not here. There's mm-hmm. there's a sliding doors where it went that way, where the ancient master and the infinity stone took off in that direction. And I'm dead. So in many ways, it made me more cautious. In other ways, it made me less. Because if I had only gotten 24 years, well, shit, I had a good run. So I'm going to continue. I'm like, I just was kind of stumbling through going, yeah, I want to be an actor. This is fun. But now it's like, screw it. I'm going to do the things, see the places, eat the food, drink the drink, kiss the girls. I'm going to live harder, larger, bigger, riskier. I still don't like roller coasters, but that's more because it gives me a headache and makes my stomach sick. But that being said, I'm going to learn how to surf. I'm going to find a way to see Italy. I'm going to find like this is it. These are the days of our lives. and that's what I got out of it, is ultimately I'm on borrowed time. I've been given that chance to go, yeah, you didn't die today. Use it wisely. Enjoy it. You know, I go to that Alan Watts quote, and again, I will butcher it, about life. The meaning of life is essentially playfulness. Mm. So that if we're not feeding ourselves, we're not looking for to get out of the rain and put food in our stomachs and stop the other guy from shooting us. We do all of that so that we can play, so that we can celebrate consciousness and celebrate existence and celebrate ourselves. Life isn't suffering. It is working to not suffer so that we can play. That is it.
I love that.
Life is not a song. You don't sing a song to get to the end of it. Or life is a song. You don't sing a song.
Life is a song.
Life is a song. You don't sing a song. Life is not a journey. That's what he says. Life is not a journey because a journey is a destination. I'm going here to get there. We are not rushing to the end of this. We are putting the needle on the record to enjoy the notes, to enjoy the tune, to dance to the song. And then the song will end and the dance will be over. But it is about the act of the dance and the act of the singing, not to get to the end of it. A journey is often destination bound. And so
right.
I think having a gun put to my head was to remind me to, you know, as cliche as it sounds, to dance more. Like, if that's what you get, this is what you get. If I had gotten 24 years, did I dance enough? Did I sing enough? Did I, yeah.
And you've now lived more time.
Quite a bit.
Some undisclosed number of.
Twice as more. More than twice.
Twice as more. You've lived two Todd Stashwick's worth of
time. I've now lived
Todd
two Stashwick, yeah. So I'm 51 now. So this is 27 years later.
Do you feel like you've danced the dance and sung the song that time?
I don't have regrets. I'm not a person who has regrets. There are things that I make sure that I apologize for.
Well, you know, we're all human after all.
Right. But I don't have any regrets in choices. Oh, I wish I had done this. I'm sad that I never X.
Sure.
I do on a daily basis going, Todd, write more, make more things.
Like, yeah. My next question is like, what is the song? What's the next song to sing, or what dance do you want to be dancing?
Well, you and I are improvisers
during this time.
We're, you know, it's like Indiana Jones says, I don't know, I'm making this up as I go. I mean, I do put in focus points on a map in terms of the journey of it all, because I think one's career can be a journey, and you go, well, if I have a destination, then I know how to pack, what to pack, how much gas to put in the car, making practical decisions going forward. I am a logical thinker. Like, my father fixed machines and my mother for many years was a bookkeeper. So there was a methodical, like, I never look at acting or writing or anything as this mystical, magical, arty thing. I was always the blue collar kid in theater class. Like, tell me where to saw, I'll saw that. And then we will put these boards together. And then that's how we will create this character or this moment. I'm very practical when it comes to acting or art. The magic
I think that
happens.
Makes a lot of sense, though. I mean, you know, it's like my dad often has said things along the lines of this conversation that have stuck with me. One of them being, you know, if you come up with a plan and then you take the first step in that plan, then you're moving towards something.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're actually moving towards, but to move with energy, with vigor, then you have to at least set your sights on something and move towards it, but be open to what other things might show up, because there may be a better path to jump to, or perhaps you were on that path all along and never knew, but it's like, you got to still look forward to be in the present a little.
As a larval actor in high school, in my pupa stage, I was like, I want to be Bill Murray. I want to be on Saturday Night Live. That's my goal. So moving towards that led me to Second City and eventually being up for Saturday Night Live, but I didn't get it. But the didn't get it, you know, it's Dungeons and Dragons. Did you roll a 1 or did you roll a 20? there's no failure in D&D, because the 1 just makes the story go this way, the 20 makes the story go that way. So there's just more interesting, you know. I will wind this back. So I was writing with Gavin O'Connor, director. He directed the film The Way Back that I just did, and he and I were doing, before James Gunn came on, we were co-writing Suicide Squad 2, and Gavin was going to direct it. But that, we would get to a place, and then we would have totally painted our characters into a corner, and Gavin would go, well, that's good for us, because there's story there. When the thing you think you wanted to do, or when things aren't working out great, the how you get out of being painted in the corner is the story. That's who you are after that adversity, is the story. So to what you were saying about side streets, and as long as you're moving forward, I was moving towards wanting to be a sketch comedy actor, and now I'm neck deep in science fiction and fantasy. Mm-hmm. I haven't had a really opportunity to do half hour sitcoms in a long time, but I did a lot of them when I came to LA, but my path has led me down, oddly, this more nerdy path, which speaks to so much more of who I am as a human. Mm. I am this guy. I am a comic book kid, a Star Wars kid, a Dungeons and Dragons kid. And so the fact that now I write and act in that medium and in those genres really are who I am, even though comedy was what started me on this journey in the first place, was improv and sketch and wanting to be a Ghostbuster and wanting to do Saturday Night Live is what led me out the door. But then the side street actually led me to the thoroughfare that I needed to be on.
It's a lovely way to say that. Well, I could easily spend the rest of the day just having this conversation with you, Todd. There's no doubt in my mind. I think that your insights are lovely, and I love hearing all this stuff, but time is of the essence, and we have other conversations to have on this Sunday. And so, you know, to close things out, if you were going to impart some closing words of wisdom about processing these pivotal moments in people's lives, what would that closing thought be?
Well, you know, it's my wife and I were talking about this a little bit yesterday, kind of when people have faced like a violent act or a form of abuse. You didn't pick that to happen to you. That's on them. That's on them. They chose to do this to me. What I choose to do beyond that, I'm not defined by their choice of violence upon me. I'm not defined by that. I am defined by what I choose to do with that experience. There was trauma and healing that needed to occur from that, but there also, you know, heat and pressure and violence makes diamonds, right? Like it is a chaotic environment that forges something that is ridiculously durable, going back to scars. It forges something ridiculously durable that is beautiful and pristine and reflective. So when you've done the self-care to get yourself through the dark part of the trauma, find a way to keep dancing. Mm. You know, to keep playing. Don't let it breed cynicism. Let it breed hope. And hope for other people as maybe an example of there is another side of this. You're not stuck there in that moment of violence or in that moment of abuse. In that moment, you're not stuck there. That is a thing that you need to process. That wasn't your fault, but it is an experience in your life that you go, well, shit, if I don't find a way to find something hopeful out of this, then it won. It beat me. I was shot dead there.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. If you are interested in seeing Todd Stashwick in action as an actor, there are 4 seasons of 12 Monkeys to watch.
A really good time to watch it too, because it's about people getting through a pandemic. I highly recommend it. It's funny. It's pop culture-y. It's dramatic. It's heartwarming. The action is amazing. And it's smart as hell. It's really good TV.
Awesome. Where can people watch 12 Monkeys?
Hulu.
Perfect.
Or you can buy it on iTunes.
Fantastic. Yeah. And what is the next project on the horizon for you?
I'm doing a lot of writing right now. I'm working on a couple projects that I've been hired to write on that I can't talk about. And then I'm writing my own stuff. I'm developing a graphic novel. Obviously, all production has screeched to a halt. On a lighter note, you can watch Kim Possible on Disney Channel. I was in the way back. You can see that. And then the future, who knows, because, you know, we're in lockdown. So just the future is so bright. We'll see.
Future is still out there.
Whether you like it or not.
It's going to be something. We'll find out when we get there. It's totally happening already. Yep. Future is now. Todd Stashwick, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aiden, for having me. This has been a hoot. Bye, everybody.
Words about change were poetic when he described the nature of change as moments when we experience a shattering of a paradigm. We experience these pivots, shifts, and invitations to stop seeing something one way and start seeing them another throughout our lives. Sometimes they're small and easy adjustments, leading us to simply go, huh, I never thought of that before. And sometimes, as Todd shared, these moments are sharp and abrupt, more akin to taking a sudden sharp turn in the midst of driving. And though everyone in the car is in one piece, these big moments may need to be followed with a bit of pause to assess, make sure everyone's still okay, and tend wounds. If we let them, the scars that form from these high-intensity experiences can make us stronger, give us greater insights into ourselves and our world, and open up a brightness and hope within us. Ultimately, it's our choice whether to allow our understanding of reality to grow and shift or to hold on rigidly to our perspectives as if clinging tightly to an old security blanket. If you haven't already, please check out the series 12 Monkeys, where you can enjoy Todd Stashwick in role as Theodore Deacon, or feel free to enjoy him with the whole family as Dr. Draken in Disney's Kim Possible. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review us, and thank you for supporting this show. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Show notes for this episode are available on our website, thechangedpodcast.com. You've been listening to The Changed Podcast. I'm Aiden Nipom, and I wish you the kind of experiences in life you're excited to tell stories about.